Okay, so here we are. This is episode one of the WP Hackers podcast. My name is Jonathan. I'm your host today and your host probably for a while. And with me today, I've got Segan Davis. Segan is somebody that I met a few years ago at WordCamp Cape Town, and we've kind of become good WordPress buddies over Slack and over various things. So Segan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, very well, Jonathan. And yourself?
Awesome. No, I'm good, man. Thanks. So before we get started into sort of the main bulk of what we want to chat about, I thought it would be a great idea for you to just give us a very quick introduction to who you are, what you do, where you work, a little bit of your current status and that kind of thing.
Cool. So yeah, my name is Segan Davis, as you mentioned. I'm the head maker of things at Flickleap. I know you enjoyed that title last year.
I love it.
Yeah, so Flickleap is the company I'm the co-owner of. We actually merged with another company earlier this year to add in a few additional services. So yeah, it's been quite a journey on that side. Digitaleap, which was my previous company, we actually predominantly WordPress, a WordPress company, and we have been for a while. We took the decision about 6 years ago for it to be the only CMS we use.
Okay.
We do custom dev as well, but it's the only CMS we build for. So if someone came to us with Joomla or Drupal or stuff like that, we'd either convert them or not accept them as clients.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a big decision, scary at first, but yeah, it's actually made it more scary. So yeah, so I've been using WordPress since 1.5, which I think was like 2006 or 2007, around there. Actually, one of my friends who was really big on the online community side, I was using Joomla, and he was like, you should use WordPress, it's going to be the future. And I was like, oh, but Joomla this, and Joomla can do that, and WordPress is just a blog. And he was like, bro, just do it. And I trusted him, because he was like, you know, he had like big ties and big companies in South Africa. So I was like, okay, got to do it. And I did it, and I haven't looked back. So yeah, it's been a journey, but it's been great.
Awesome. So, that's really interesting. If I look at my, and also just for those that are listening to this and Segan, for your purpose as well, the whole point of this chat is just to kind of share stories and share knowledge. So if I look at my WordPress history, everybody that I always spoke to about WordPress was always so negative about. There was one guy who I chatted to, and we almost started our journeys into the digital space at roughly the same time. And we knew each other. We weren't massive friends, but we knew each other through other connections and through previous history. So we always chatted back then via Skype or whatever, MSN, I think it was, before Skype even became popular. And he was very pro WordPress early on. But everybody besides him that I spoke to was always very negative of WordPress. And I think it was the usual, you know, it's insecure, the early problems, you know, and people tend to focus on those early problems. So I think it's really cool to hear that somebody that you spoke to very early on gave you positive feedback. That's quite interesting. One last question on the bio side, very, very important as a developer. What are you drinking today?
Definitely coffee.
What, yeah. I assume you guys have like a brand of coffee that you drink in the office?
Yeah. So, for a while we just used any brand we could get. This was before we merged with the company. The previous company just had a coffee machine and whatever they got their hands on. I'm a bit of a snob, so I like the good coffee. So cool. One of my friends actually roasts coffee, so he supplies us with all our coffee now.
Oh wow, that's nice.
It's pretty rad. And
okay, cool.
I love his coffee. And
so is it a brand that you can buy, or is it just his? He's like, okay.
Yeah, it's a brand you can buy. It's called Purist Coffee.
Purist Coffee.
Yeah, he's very much into technology, like loves tech. So he's like trying to do IoT devices where you put it with coffee machines and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's really nice. Also converted him to WordPress from Joomla. So cool. He loves it so far.
Great. That's awesome. Yeah, from my side, I work for myself, so I drink whatever's the cheapest.
generally the case.
This is another sort of history situation, but most of the companies that I work for, probably being in the northern suburbs of Cape Town, the coffee selections are usually fairly poor. I remember working for a company once where the coffee that was delivered, it was great because there was a lady who delivered coffee for you, but it was like Rick Coffee or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember we went to a management meeting, and at the management meeting, they had a proper espresso maker type, you know, one button push and it makes whatever you want.
Yeah.
And during the meeting, we were asked to come up with innovations for the company. And the head of operations, who was a good mate of mine, one of his innovations was, Rick Coffee is not coffee. Cool.
Yeah,
so we've covered WordPress history, but the one thing that I wanted to ask you is, did you use WordPress as a developer first or as a user slash blogger first?
Yeah, I would say it's more on the user slash blogger side of things.
Okay.
To a certain extent. So, I mean, I wasn't like just a blogger that had a WordPress site. I mean, I built most of the themes I used in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So I like get inspiration because I built my Joomla theme. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to build my WordPress themes as well. And I did, and I went through the whole experience of like 1,000 template files and trying to get everything to work properly and stuff like that. I've since changed because I think I just don't have time to make my own themes. But, yeah, so I mostly just to like as a platform. I think I really enjoyed using it as a platform. And back then it was a little bit frustrating because you didn't have custom post types and stuff like that. But
right.
I could do blog posts and I could, you know, hack it to do events and stuff like that. And obviously did pages already. So it was like perfect for me as a platform. So I moved all the sites that I ran to it. And then I started realizing, wait, I can extend this power. So like when I started doing events, I was like, okay, well, actually I need to create something that could do events very basically. It was like very crude and stuff like that. But yeah, so I mainly used it as a content platform, but that kind of started me down the path of becoming a developer.
Okay, awesome. So then I want to get onto your development history. So it's always interesting to me if I think about myself, I spent 5 years after I left school working in the retail sort of industry, trying to figure out where I was going to go. Then I realized that actually I'm actually quite good at this whole computer thing. So let's see what we can find there. And I ended up doing a programming diploma, and then I ended up working and sort of figuring out my way until eventually I ended up, you know, working on the web. So maybe you can give us a little bit of background as to, you know, after you left school, how did you end up as a developer? What decisions did you make? You know, was it I want to do this, or was it something that you stumbled into?
So, I mean, I was fortunate enough in school to have computer science as a subject. So or they called it computer studies back then.
Okay.
So I got like kind of put into the programming slash IT fields like from school. And that's something I wanted to do. I loved pulling PCs apart and putting them back together. And so when I left school, I actually went to go, I was in Australia for a couple of months. I went there on a sporting tour and stayed a while on with a friend. And then I came back and I was like, okay, cool, I need to study. Looked at a few options and decided to do IT engineer diploma through CTI. And it was cool, but it taught me to be a support technician. Basically, yeah. to update Microsoft's Windows and fix machines and stuff like that, which was cool because that was my first job. So I basically started out doing IT support for a company, and I mean, it was a company that outsourced IT support. So yeah, I did that for about 2 years. And I enjoyed it. I still enjoy it a little bit, but it wasn't my passion. And in that time, I actually started building my own little like sites and like little tiny businesses that I was doing on the side. And I really started to enjoy it. I mean, I wasn't a programmer at all, but I could throw a team together. I knew basic PHP, didn't even know how to do an array or what even array was. So that was like magical stuff that I hadn't really tried. Yeah. Then towards the end of that, I was like thoroughly enjoying it. And funny enough, my uncle had seen that I'd been building these sites, and he was like, well, you know, we need another developer. Would you want to come on as a junior?
Okay.
And then I was like, well, yeah, I'd love it. Went for an interview, got the job. And then that pretty much started my developer path, I guess. So I started as a really junior PHP developer, started building sites and things like Cake PHP and Vanilla PHP, and then obviously started pushing WordPress as a CMS in the company. They did adopt it for some of the sites, and then yeah, just had to learn a lot over the years.
Awesome. So one question that I don't have on the list of questions, but it's something that I find interesting now, sort of listening to you saying this. So how did you go from this is less of a developer question and more of a, you know, business entrepreneur question, but how did you get from the point of working for a company to being the co-founder of your own company?
I think it's just probably commitment to the company. So just showing like this, I'm a person they can trust, and I'm not going to like just kind of take shares and that's it. So I put in the hard work. I mean, I worked for the company for 2.5 years, I think. And then funny enough, one of the business partners left. and he was quite an integral part of the company, so they wanted to close it down. So in the formation of the new company, which would be DigiLeap, I was going to be brought along, and because it was a startup and we were going to throw out IT support and all that kind of stuff, it was pretty much, you need to be here so we can grow this company, so we'll give you shares in it. So I was a shareholder from the start of that company, and then just carrying building up to where we are now.
Okay. So yeah. the company that you were working at before the merge, was that the company where you started as the junior programmer? Oh, hectic.
Well, that's the kind of like split off of that. So there was a company called TX Solutions, which I think TX standard for like something like Team Extreme or something. It was a lot of guys from university together, and they were like, I think they had a team called Team Extreme, like a game. Okay. And they were like, oh, cool, let's start a company. And it was like TX Solutions. So that was IT support and development. I was a junior developer and occasionally did IT support. Then when that closed, we started DigiLeap, which started in 2010.
Okay, interesting. That's super interesting. Wow, okay. Cool. So we've covered kind of the introduction, your WordPress history, your development history. So let's get into kind of, you know, all what I like to call all things WordPress. So if you had to define your primary function as a WordPress developer now, would you be working mostly on, for example, client work or developing plugins for sale or developing themes for sale or some other? So what would your primary function be as a WordPress developer?
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be client work. Mm-hmm. We do have a couple of plugins that we've worked with and are out there, but they're not a primary focus of ours. A big focus of ours now is like WordPress solutions for our clients. Mm-hmm. So, and that ranges from just building a site to like more advanced plugins on WooCommerce or just on the site in general, building the platform correctly, hosting it correctly, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool. So, and when you say you got plugins out there, are they free plugins on the repository or are they paid for?
Yeah, there's one really simple one which I launched like long time ago.
Okay.
And it's called the Social Links plugin, and it basically adds in a whole lot of social icons in your sidebar. And it was actually, because back then there was nothing like that. So it did really well, and now there's like every theme out there has it built in.
Yeah, pretty much.
But funny enough, people still download it, and we actually had a stint where you could only get certain amount of social networks, and then you had to pay for the rest.
Right.
We actually changed it to be in the process of merging it all into one thing and making it all free.
Okay. Okay. So was there a time where you were supporting that paid for plugin?
Yeah. So supporting both. So.
And how fun was that?
We had our moments, especially when you broke things. Then like, I moved to more like a modern PHP standards, and it broke a whole lot of like pre 5.2. And like there was chaos because people just white screening everywhere.
Yeah.
And so we had to like do a bit of a backwards compatibility fix. But that was like my first big test where like we got about, I don't know, maybe 100 queries saying, like, hey, listen, my site's broken now.
Yeah.
Or like even guys, like I ran the update on all my client sites and now it's broken.
Yeah.
I'm not using it.
And you're kind of going, why didn't you test it on a staging site first?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know your pain. We had a very similar problem with Seriously Simple Podcasting when we launched the sort of big update that included the offsite hosting option. We were using the AWS SDK, and you know, as I actually had a conversation with Craig about it recently. You know, for me, coming from the very sort of agency background that I'd come from, we always had control over our clients' hosting environments. So we always made sure that it had whatever the best or latest version of whatever was on our, you know, we actually had a bunch of managed servers, I think it was, with Hetzner. So we just controlled that and we made sure it was always the latest and greatest, and, you know, PHP versions and MySQL versions were never a problem. And then I'm working on this plugin, which is used by, you know, WordPress users, and they're, you know, WordPress still supports 5.2 and the SDK, I think, required 5.3.3 and above. And yeah, we just crashed a whole bunch of people's sites. So that was an interesting little learning curve, and it was quick to fix. I mean, we rolled back the SDK version to a previous version. It was the same one that the Delicious Brains plugin uses. And I had a nice little chat with Ian, I think it was, via his blog post about that. But that, I think, for me, was the biggest kind of learning curve about developing for WordPress.
Yeah.
Is if you're going to develop for WordPress, make sure that you're supporting, you know, the same versions that WordPress supports.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I should have... At least if someone doesn't support the version that WordPress requires, it's not your problem because it's not even work.
Yeah. It's interesting though there, because at the moment there's actually a bit of a push. There's a core PHP channel, or at least team, if you will, inside of WordPress. And there's a bit of a push there. Their sort of main focus is to start looking at migrating everybody using older versions to newer versions. Mm. And it's an interesting conversation because obviously one of the main reasons that WordPress Core, if you will, wants to still support these versions is because they want the lowest barrier to entry as possible. Mm. And the hosts, there are still hosts out there that are using, 5.2 and 5.3. So they need to know that people can still use it. So there's a big push to actually start working on the hosts and start trying to convince them to deprecate, say, for example, to start with 5.2, get everybody up to 5.3 and then move on from there. So it's going to be interesting over the next few years to see whether that gets some kind of traction or not.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely something that has been around long enough, at least in my opinion, that it'd be cool to start doing something with it. But I also do understand why they can't do, massive sweeping changes.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think it's something like 5% of WordPress sites are still on 5.2.
And I mean, if you look at the numbers, the total numbers, that's huge.
So like a million, I think, or something crazy.
Yeah, like that. Something like that. Awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you find this, but I find people that use free software tend to moan the quickest.
Yes.
When it breaks.
It is ironic, to be honest.
It is very. Okay, so in your day-to-day work, in your position, what are the main areas that you tend to focus on when it comes to WordPress?
So mainly around the development side. I'm fortunate enough to have a design team that works on front-end stuff.
Okay.
So I haven't had to spend a lot of time there, although we are considering building our own kind of theme system just to make it easier for the design team to get stuff up and running. And stuff
like that.
So, but it'll be all around development anyway. So pretty much my day-to-day stuff is I lead the tech team here. So it's any development or technology related stuff. I spend my time either advancing that or directing that, and then doing development myself. Part of it would be, kind of workflow, the dev workflow, which is a big part of what you're doing now. How we work from clients, our dev environments to staging environments to production environments. I'm spending a lot of time on that just because we've experienced really bad issues with working with data that's irrelevant to live and then it doesn't work on live and all that kind of stuff. And then, spending a lot of time on actual development for our clients. So if it's a update to a plugin they need or extra features on WooCommerce or stuff like that, involved in that. And also obviously the strategic direction on that. So what we're going to do and how we're going to do it.
Awesome. Okay. So getting into WordPress itself, you've been using it, I think you said, from like 1.5 or something like that? Something along those lines. So you've been with it for a lot longer than I have. So if you had to, and this is obviously your personal opinion, so I'm not expecting you to answer for the world, but if you had to say the one biggest positive about using WordPress and the one biggest negative about using WordPress, in your opinion, what would that be?
I think that definitely the positive is the user experience. So just because of that, there's a lot of people that know about it and can easily use it, which means that it's quite often an easy way to get, especially like clients and people just to like it in general, is that it's really easy to use software to manage your site. There's tons of software out there that can be used. You can name like 10 probably right now, but WordPress by far is the most user-friendly. So when you look at all the ones that are maybe better in their design pattern, the WordPress definitely trumps them in user experience, which will almost always win, especially when you're talking to a client. It's very like, it's not often where you'll go to clients be like, I know that WordPress is very easy to use, but you'd rather go for something that's easier for us to develop. And they go like, go for it. So I think that's the biggest win for WordPress. And it will be like that because they drive so hard at pushing the user side of things, which probably means that the worst side of it is that it's maybe not the system that's most very well designed for developers. But having said that, it's got a lot better over the years. And I often think it's sometimes a little bit of a misconception because a developer doesn't really know what's going on with WordPress and how it works. A story that I can say is that one of our devs never used WordPress, and I could quote unquote, he hated WordPress because it was so complicated and didn't make any sense. And now he's one of our lead devs on WordPress. So he actually works on some of our bigger projects on WordPress, and he's actually learning, oh, okay, so that's how filters work, that's how hooks work. So it's a lot of just try to understand. But I think that's because WordPress isn't like dev friendly, and probably like, I think we've had this discussion before about scale and all that kind of stuff. It's not, the resources out there on the dev side probably aren't as big as the user side. And so a lot of devs are maybe a little bit hesitant to go with it, and it makes it a lot harder to get that going. But having said that, I think once you learn how to dev correctly on WordPress and how it actually works, it gets a lot better. But that barrier to entry, even though they try to make it easy to develop stuff, which might also be a negative, because easy to dev stuff means that generally you do it wrong. So you can't do it, but it doesn't mean it's right. I think Laravel has the same issue. You could do something 1,000 ways in Laravel, doesn't mean that it's right. Also right for your team, I guess. But once you get used to it, it actually is quite good. But that initial barrier is sometimes the issue, and probably its biggest negative.
That's interesting. I'm of the opinion, and I think this counts for anything really, is that if you're the kind of person who comes to anything with preconceived ideas, you're going to find it hard to learn. And I think that, in my opinion, one of the biggest negatives around WordPress is that there aren't enough people talking about the positives.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, and I mean, there was a talk that I was watching, I think I sent it to the development channel in our Slack team, a talk that I was watching from 2014 where Nason was talking about some of the assumptions around WordPress. And a lot of them, I think, are still based around initial assumptions that people made in the early-ish days. And they kind of went, well, that's the way it is, and they moved on with their lives, and they went and learned other better, cooler things, and they've never really come back and gone and had a look at what's changed. I mean, for me personally, I found that when I switched to WordPress, I mean, I use WordPress as a blogging platform since 2009, just because it was the easiest one to get set up and blog with. I migrated from Drupal to WordPress specifically because of that. But as I said earlier, everybody I spoke to was always very negative about the development side of it, so I never looked at it. And it was only going to WordCamp and listening to some of the development talks there that I went, actually, this is pretty cool what it does. And I actually almost see myself as sort of aligning with the way this develops. So let me get stuck in and let me have a look. And when I did that, then I went, this is actually, I'm enjoying this. And I think it's because I like to think myself as the kind of person who tries not to come into any new thing with preconceived ideas or preconceived biases. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love, you know, modern architecture. I love using things like Laravel and CakePHP and, you know, all these modern tools. But I also like just trying something new and just seeing what I can do with it. And I think that a lot of people, I had this a lot when I was working at one of my previous companies before I, you know, left sort of employment and became a freelancer. They had their own internal CMS that they'd been developing on for almost as long as WordPress is being developed on. And it had similar problems and similar positive things about it to WordPress. But any new developers that came in that sort of had 2 or 3 years of experience in, you know, whatever was the, you know, the new hot framework, they used to hate it because it was just so different to what they were used to. But those that took the time to go, well, this is different, let me sit down and learn. Let me be prepared to be open and accept difference. They end up thriving, you know, because then they learn the cool, they get past the bad stuff and they learn the cool stuff. And I think that's a lot to do with the type of person as well.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of people don't ask the why behind the what.
Yeah.
So why are we doing something rather than, oh no, like what you're doing is wrong. And I think that's becomes the biggest issue. Like people, and maybe it's, I mean, there's positives and negatives to backwards compatibility, and people are like, it's rubbish that they do that. And some people understand why they do that. But if you actually just really look at the why they've done any of the stuff they've done, it's actually quite good. And you're like, oh, okay, so that's why they're doing that. And that's why that's done that way. Okay, actually, it makes a lot of sense. And like things that are that break things, especially with updates, actually get a lot like a bad rep. We've got a couple of old clients that are running Magento installs, and the whole Magento 1 to 2 upgrade path is just a nightmare. Like it's probably taken us about 3 or 4 months to prep an upgrade from the older version of Magento to the latest 2.1, whatever. And that's damn frustrating. Like we actually considered rebuilding the whole site. We were already like 75% of the way through, and like, actually it might just be quicker to move it all to WooCommerce and go from there.
Right.
So yeah, I think as much as there's a negative about supporting 5.2, I think the, like, if you ask the why, and that's any of the like the design pattern or whatever you're looking at in terms of WordPress, it's the why behind it is the biggest selling card. Like, this is why we do it, and this is why we actually care, because we're not going to mess around 10 million people.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. So, so in terms of WordPress, one of the biggest sort of conversations that's happening right now, and it was re-sparked again recently with the whole patent clause, is this whole React versus Vue debate. Yeah. And I'm asking this of the interviews that I'm going to be having, because I don't really have much experience in either. I've started a React for the React for Beginners course that Wes Boss has put out there, and I haven't had a chance to look at Vue yet, but I've been kind of following the conversation. And as far as I know, you do have some experience in both, or if you don't, maybe you have some kind of opinion on the topic, and I'd just like to hear that.
So we've not done much front end stuff in terms of JS before we merged. But when we merged, we had Red Hat been on my radar. So we were going to go with either Angular or React. Vue was kind of growing in popularity, but it wasn't on my radar at that point. And then when we merged, we were like, okay, cool. We need to start moving towards front-end technologies. I'd taken over a few projects in Angular and Ionic, and I wasn't really enjoying it. And also knew that React and Vue were starting to grow in momentum. So I was like, okay, cool. Let me look at those two plugins. And then we recently decided, maybe like 2-3 months ago, that we're going to go with React. Okay. And there's a whole lot of decisions around that. We also looked at that whole clause, and we decided that we're probably not going to sue Facebook at any point. So not going to be much of an issue for us. But the way that we looked at it is, like, what are the different, like, requirements for us, and like barriers to entry, and I think it was Delicious Brains that had the whole, like, comparison between Vue and React, and I mean that was great. So we got the dev team together and we chatted about, like, what are our requirements and is this going to help? So we do a little bit of native apps, well, not native apps, but app development as well. And we're like, okay, well, how are we going to make our life easier across the board? So when you use Angular and Ionic in the past, that works very well. So maybe we need to look at something like that. And so we're like, okay, cool. Well, React, there's React Native. And then we started looking at Vue, and there isn't really a native wrapper for Vue. So that we're like, okay, well, that's one bad point. And we just then started looking at the momentum of each project, and Vue's like growing rapidly. But I mean, React is just massive because of the backing they have. So we're like, okay, well, they're going to be pretty solid for the next couple of years. And if Facebook are using it, it's not going to stagnate. Like, we don't have to risk that. Then we started looking into the way that the React templating works, and the Vue templating, and the speed of it. And we're like, there's differences, but it's not too great. So we actually just said we're going to commit to React for the foreseeable future, actually get planted in it, and then see from there. The ability for us to build all our apps natively as well using React Native. And that was a massive positive for us. So yeah, we're starting to work a lot with React now. The thing is with Vue is that because we also adopted Laravel as our custom framework, they're very much they're a backlog. So now, like, we're kind of stuck between, okay, well, Laravel and the whole Laravel environment is amazing because they've got something for everything. So maybe we should consider it, but we're like, Laravel can be used as an API or something like that. We go stick with React specifically around the whole native side of it, because a lot of our clients do have this long-term vision of going, like, with a native app or something like that. And Vue doesn't ever have that option. Well, at least won't have it for a foreseeable future. So that was our decision and why we made that decision. It doesn't mean it's right, I think. And I think everyone will have their counter arguments to whatever I've said. But I've enjoyed learning React over the last couple of months and just getting to understand it and dive deeper into it. And it's really great. And it changes our thinking, because I've always wanted to split back end from front end and have, like, those layers quite nicely separated. And when I have done that, it's just been beautiful. So, yeah, so that's where we're going. And hopefully start implementing it on our WordPress projects, because we haven't got that far yet.
Awesome. Yeah, I think the whole conversation is quite interesting because obviously for, you know, what you said earlier about, you know, we have no plans to sue Facebook. I mean, I don't think you'll ever be in a situation where you release something that will compete with Facebook and therefore you'll need to sue them for any reason. Or at least, you know, the way I understand that whole patent clause is, and I read an article about it where the guy was saying, let's say you build an app for refrigeration or something, and it's, you know, it's a React app and blah, blah, blah. And then Facebook launches a service that directly competes with yours and, you know, uses some kind of personal IP or whatever that you have, because of this patent clause, you would have to rewrite your whole front end before you could take the legal process that you would normally be able to take against Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, while I don't disagree with the argument, I mean, the person writing the argument does have a point. I can't see Facebook moving into any major areas besides what they're already doing anyway. So I think that if you started a service that competes directly with Facebook, they probably have a better chance of suing you than the other way around.
Yeah.
So I think that people, and I mean, I get, you know, people are saying, you know, that Facebook is, like, there was another article that I read that said, you know, this is not how you do open source. And they're basically saying open source means you can do whatever you want, whenever you want, and it shouldn't have any negative effect. And, you know, I do agree on that as well. But at the end of the day, Facebook has released this under their own terms. It is, as far as I understand it, perfectly legal to do so. It's their choice to do so. And their reasoning is, you know, they're trying to prevent themselves being open to, you know, ridiculous legal activity, you know, somebody just suing them randomly or whatever. So I kind of understand that. I think from the WordPress project, from the actual, if you look at the actual project, I don't think if they choose React, it would have a problem for the project, because I don't think WordPress as a project will ever sue Facebook for anything. What the concern is if, you know, companies who are building on WordPress, you know, they might have some kind of legal issue. So it's an interesting one to discuss. It's one that I don't have enough legal knowledge of to safely be able to comment on. I know that the sort of the pro around React is there's a much bigger community and it's sort of much more, or at least many more people working on it. Whereas Vue is, I think, one person who's working on it and one person who's controlling it. But then on the other side, what I'm reading is that Vue is a lot more like WordPress in terms of having separated templates and a few other things. So a lot of WordPress developers are more keen on Vue. It's an interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes and what happens.
Yeah, I mean, our first thing is to start implementing something in WordPress on React. Then we can start actually having a really in-depth conversation if it's right where we're going. Mm. But having said that, and I mean, I'm no lawyer either, but I think you could have to be doing a lot of damage to Facebook for them to like care about going into all of your projects and seeing if it is React.
Exactly.
So I mean, I think I also read an article the other day about the guy saying, like, you know, you need to like prove serious damage to either party to have a judge actually even consider making this a problem.
Mm.
So like if you were big enough to have a claim against Facebook that you took it to the court and Facebook revoked your rights, they're going to have to also be like, okay, well, is this even something we'd have to consider? Like,
yeah.
Are you going to have to remove their license on their React app to allow them to, as the license states, and will that, try to get the right wording here because I don't want to be held accountable for what I've said. will the judge go like, yeah, actually, I can see there's damages and you're going to have to pay millions.
Yeah.
Like the judge will probably be like, well, this is retarded.
Yeah.
Just focus on the patent claim.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think that, you know, if you think about it, I don't know. I don't want to say, you know, this would never happen, but I think in my opinion anyway, the only companies who might not want to use React would be really big companies like Google, and they're doing their own thing probably anyway. Mm. You know?
So,
as I say, it's interesting. It'd be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they're actually protecting themselves from is someone like Samsung going, sweet, this is going to be great for our website. They put it on their website, and then a week later, they have their next 100 patent claims against Facebook, and they're like, Facebook being like, sweet, your whole website is built on React. So
exactly.
let's have this conversation once you've sorted that out.
Exactly.
Yeah. But unless you're a multi-billion dollar company, I don't think you actually have to worry too much.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's get on to more topics, more in the lines of hacking or coding or programming. I always find it interesting. I use the word hacking in the original sense of the word, which is just, you know, someone who writes code. But obviously with the movie Hackers and various other sort of, you know, social events, hacking has become something that tends to mean, you know, illegal activity. But, you know, the original hacker was somebody who just sat and wrote code all day. So besides the WordPress default, so besides PHP, JavaScript, HTML, and CSS, what other languages are you familiar and or comfortable with?
I wouldn't say that I'm comfortable with any other languages, but we've started using Python and Node a lot in other little projects we're doing. So it's like literally like dabbled in those two. Yeah, I'd really like to get, I mean, obviously C++ I did when I started my computer science degree, never finished it, got through the first year, and then started another job. And I was like, actually, I don't want to carry on this. But yeah, I mean, so C++ was a good foundation for like just general programming knowledge. So I know that relatively well, I can't say I'm expert, I can't say I'm comfortable, but yeah, Node and Python are languages that I'm pretty keen to get a bit more involved in terms of what you're doing specifically around chat stuff and AI stuff. Okay. We start to like play around with that and like a bit of IoT devices. That's why Python and Node are like my big things, like fooling around. Like the last week we, in the office, we just had a little bit of competition. We wanted something because often like in an open plan office, like people don't have barriers now. So they just like start interrupting people. And I read an interesting stat. I can't remember who shared it, but it was about something called context switching, which was like basically when you get distracted, you know, this whole thing about, okay, I'm in this one place and now you're distracted. You have to refocus, check what they say, and then come back into it and you lose a whole lot of time. And like the stats they're saying is like on average, someone gets interrupted like every 2 minutes by notifications, by people, by things. So like every 2 minutes, they're getting distracted and it takes them roughly 20 minutes to get completely back into whatever they were doing. So like it's pretty much impossible to focus unless you turn off everything. Hmm. And so what we said is we actually got to put like availability something on your desk. And when you're available, people can chat to you. When you're not available, like let that person focus so we can get a bit of efficiency and stuff in the office. So yeah, so I built a little IoT device and that's kind of like been my little Node. Well, it's actually in C++ first, but we're building a little Node thing for it. But yeah, I enjoy that kind of stuff. I enjoy the learning new tech. And I've always been, as a kid, wanted to build stuff. So like it was my first proper electronics job, like a little thing with a couple of LEDs, a couple of digit segments and stuff like that. So like had a little bit of fun and it was really cool learning experience. And like jumping into different programming languages is always fun, but you realize like actually they're all pretty similar. A little bit of syntax is different.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's interesting you say about the context switching. I remember when I was working at Realm, our rule was the headphone rule. So if somebody had their headphones on, you couldn't disturb them.
Yeah.
And that worked pretty well. That worked pretty well. Cool. So what do you code on every day? What IDE do you use? Are you a Vim guy? Are you a PHP Storm guy?
Sublime Text, actually.
Oh, okay.
I started using that when I moved to TX. That's the IDE that we started getting going on. So I've been using it ever since then. And I just kind of made it mine. So like I got a whole lot of plugins on there that just make my life better. So, I mean, I've thought about looking into PHP Storm a little bit more, but you know, I'm enjoying Sublime and it's free unless we contribute towards the developer. So I can't really complain. It's not making me less efficient, which is obviously good.
That's always good. Yeah, we actually, as you know, I work to get most of my work through Codable. And we actually did a little bit of a in-house review of what everybody's using. And I'm just going to find the stats quickly. As far as I remember, PHP Storm was number one and Sublime was a very close number two. Okay. So I think those two right now are the two sort of favorites generally. Mm. And I get what you're saying. I mean, I'm a little bit lazy when it comes to choosing my IDE. I generally go with whatever the company that I'm working at is using and I kind of go, well, what is this? And let's learn about it and let's see if it makes sense to me. Mm. When I first started, I was one of those horrible developers who started working in Dreamweaver. so I was coding PHP in Dreamweaver and that was not fun. and then I left working for that was sort of the situation I was working for there. And I started working for a place which had a very big open source background. And one of the developers there suggested, I've forgotten what it's called now. It's this big open source editor.
Is it Eclipse?
No, it wasn't Eclipse. It was similar to Eclipse. It was something else, but now I can't remember. Anyway, so I started using that, and I used that for many, many, many years because it was 100% open source, and it was specifically a PHP IDE.
Okay.
And then I used that until I started working at the previous company I was working for, and there everybody was using Zen Studio. And it was just a case of, you know, the editor that I was using. And it wasn't even the editor's fault. It was my own fault for the way I had the formatting set up. But I was using, like, when I used tabs or something, it gave a funny character when we did code reviews in the SVN repo or the Git repo or something like that. And so then I was just asked to switch over to Zen Studio. So I did that for a number of years. And then obviously when I left that company and I went out on my own, I kind of went back to this editor that I was using. And then purely because of getting involved in WordPress, I saw more and more people were using PHP Storm in the WordPress space. So I kind of gave that a bit of a trial and I fell in love with it from day one. So funny enough, nobody that I'd ever worked with had ever used Sublime. So I'd never had the opportunity to try it out, you know?
Yeah.
So now I'm a PHP Storm sort of evangelist, if you will, because I love it. I love what it does. But I know a lot of people use Sublime because you can kind of customize it exactly how you need it. And people get quite comfortable with that. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Sublime, and I've made a couple of changes lately that have just made my workflow like
awesome,
really, really great. I do have a friend that works solely in Emacs, and when I mean solely in Emacs, he does everything, reads emails, everything. It's like he's a proper DevOps engineer, so he pretty much life is lived in the command line, so he just carries on living in the command line.
Right.
Even with Slack, he has a IRC connector into Slack. Because he doesn't want to download any GUI of Slack.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I used to work with a guy like that who used to code in Notepad. But not like Windows Notepad, like on a Linux, like text editor, like G-Edit or whatever.
Yeah.
But he was really good at what he did. I mean, he basically, I don't think he ever checked the PHP manual. He just had everything in his head. He was one of those, you know, once he learns something, he remembers it.
Yeah.
NetBeans. NetBeans was the editor I used to use.
I was going to say NetBeans, but I didn't know if it was open source.
Yeah, I don't.
We used that because in school we did a bit of Java dev. That's where, like, we started off, and NetBeans was the...
Yeah, at the time that I was looking for a... Because when I realized that Dreamweaver was horrible, I think I basically just, you know, started this new company, and one or two of the guys there were using NetBeans, and it was just totally free, and I just thought, well, let me try it out. And it just did so much. You know, it was like, you come from Dreamweaver, anything that has any kind of syntax support is already better. Yeah. You know? And I'm kind of lazy. I'm one of those guys who doesn't really customize his IDE a lot.
Yeah.
So I generally just use whatever happens out of the box, and then I might stumble across something here and there, but I don't spend a lot of time kind of digging into the customization of it, which I really should, because it would probably speed up things for me. But yeah, I tend to just, like, get in the car, turn it on and drive, and then I'll figure out how the gears work later.
Well, I did that for a long time. So, like, I had the base install of Sublime, and I was like, yeah, this is okay, but, you know, it's no different to anything else. And actually, for a period, I was like, well, let me try Atom. See if that's any good, because you know, it's from GitHub, probably has direct connection with them, so it just probably will work very great. And then I tried it, and I was like, oh, cool, there's a few extensions, so it makes it cool. And then one of the colleagues that uses Sublime heavily was like, bro, like, this doesn't do like quarter of the stuff that Sublime can do. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, watch, there's a package installer, install that. And he was like, now go wild. And I was like, oh my goodness. So, like,
nice.
Quick snippers and all that kind of stuff is just a ton of them. Like, 100 different languages, and like even like all my markdown files, like this is a preview, so I can just build as I go. It's beautiful. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying Sublime. It's really, really
awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome. And just quickly, what development environment do you guys use? Vagrant, Docker, MAMP, WAMP?
Vagrant.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been using Vagrant since I got going with VVV.
Oh, okay.
Two years ago.
Was that after Brent's talk, or was that unrelated to that?
Unrelated to that.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out what it was suggested by someone. I can't just remember who it was, though. But yeah, VVV is what got me into Vagrant. But then it just got so heavy that I was like, let me start looking at other things. So I'm actually really enjoying Homestead from Laravel.
You use Homestead for your WordPress dev?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And then we just have a command that installs WPCLI.
Okay.
And you're going to do a couple of other things as well. So I just enjoy Homestead because it's so lightweight. So it just allows us to quickly dev. The only issue I realized a couple of weeks ago is that it's Nginx and one of our servers is Apache. And I was like, oh, why is it working on my local environment? So Yeah, so try to figure that out. But having said that, we might also start moving to use Laravel Forged for a lot of our hosting environments.
Oh, okay.
Just because of that amazing workflow that they have. There's a whole lot of things that we're trying, but yeah, Bateman at the moment, one of our devs was using MAMP. Yeah, it was MAMP because on Mac. MAMP, and he was having tons of issues, and he was never on the same environment, and it was like a mission for him to get it going, and we're like, go, Vagrant, let's do it. So yeah, so everyone will be using Vagrant going forward, which is great.
Yeah, that I find one of the great things about using something like Vagrant or Docker is just the fact that everybody's developing on the same environment. You know, I come from a Windows environment and then switching to Linux, and I just found using whatever's like a WAMP or whatever's on your local machine, you end up with, and then not even that, but when you want to test on the server, you know, then when I was on a Windows machine in the early days, I used to make mistakes with file names. So I would use like uppercase and lowercase, but then in the code, I would just check for lowercase or uppercase or whatever it was. Yeah. And I think in Windows it works, but when you go to Linux, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I spent like hours trying to figure that out. It's my own lazy, stupid fault. But yeah, having an environment that more closely matches your live and staging environments, I found to be a great help.
Well, as far as I know, you can also, like even with Linux, like Apache can be set to be case sensitive as well. So,
yes, that's
so
right.
like his machine, the MAMP that he was using on his machine was also case sensitive. And so when he deployed live, it would be like not working. It'd be like, what the heck? Oh,
flip. Can't find it. Yeah. Yep. That's actually an interesting story. That's actually one of the reasons why I started using Ubuntu, was because I wanted a server at home that I could dev on that was going to be more similar to the sites, the servers that my code was going to. And then I just started playing with Ubuntu and kind of it became my primary OS. So very quickly, we're kind of running out of time, so I want to rush through these very quickly. But are you currently in the process of learning any new technology or language or tech stack or anything like that?
Yeah, so I mean, let's try to get deeper into React, and then Node and Python are on my list. We try to do this like really cool internal Slack bot thing for the availability stuff. So we're trying that out quite a bit now. So Node is on top of our list. We also have one of our clients that a lot of their dev is outsourced to another company, but we do like a whole lot of the integration stuff. So they did a bit of stuff in Node as well. So I had to learn that to help and integrate it into our systems and stuff like that. So yeah, that's Node and Python and React are probably top of my list, on top of making sure I know enough about PHP to do my job properly.
Awesome. So the second last question, if you had to go back in time to sort of, let's say when you started as that junior developer, and if you could change one thing, one mistake or one failure that you would like to do differently, can you think of anything like that? Can you think of anything that you'd like to go back and change?
Not really. I think I would have liked to have spent a lot more time understanding PHP. And I think it's changed a lot since I started, but it's probably a little bit unfair to say that because all the stuff that I'd want to like be more well-versed in now didn't exist back when I started. But just to be like a generally better programmer would have been a lot more helpful, because all the things I've been learning over the last, let's say, 10 years or 9 years have all about being about making me just a better programmer. So I haven't really got a whole lot more well-versed in PHP. But I mean, my programming understanding has got a lot better.
Okay.
And so that's been a little bit of a frustration. And so it's something I'm actively working on now. So yeah, it's a little bit hard to say, but I think other than being not accelerated, my path into PHP has been like pretty acceptable. I at least had someone who could like coach me in what to do and what not to do. One of the things that I'd probably say is that I wish I'd spent a lot more time going to like PHP meetups or PHP conferences. And I think that would have made a huge difference, because for a while I was like underneath my uncle, for example. He's a great PHP dev. And for a long time I was like, oh geez, I'll never be as good as him. But since I've been going to PHP South Africa and the PHP meetups and just like spending a lot more time understanding what I'm doing, I've actually accelerated. I wouldn't say that I'm a better developer than him, but I've learned a ton, and I wish I'd done that even 6 years ago. I would be a lot better developer. So yeah, so I think it's just maybe the acceleration of knowledge would have been the biggest thing. If I could tell myself 10 years ago, you need to spend a ton of time learning what you're doing properly, it would make a huge difference.
That's super interesting. And I would tend to agree with you. I mean, if somebody had to come to me today and say, you know, I want to get ramped up in this, that, or the next thing, I would say to them, start attending meetups, you know. Yeah. I mean, all the information is online, but there's nothing better than being able to talk to somebody who's experienced and pick their brain. And you know, I would even say, especially if you're, it's obviously difficult if you're working for yourself and you don't get it, you know, you're not working for a company to have a mentor. But if you can find somebody who's prepared to kind of, you can ping them and you can ask them questions and you can ask for help, that's just huge. And getting involved in those communities just helps that. Cool. And then the final question I have for you today is probably the one that's been debated more times than any others: tabs or spaces, and why?
I've never actually really been fazed by it, but I've always naturally been inclined to just go to tab, because it's and I know you can create a tab so it makes four spaces, but literally, well, then you're just pressing tab.
Sure.
So tabs always made more sense to me, and I've always used tab just because it indents it nicely and you just press it once. So you haven't pressed it. Oh, did I press it three times or four times? Did I misclick or not? But yeah, we joke around at the office, but for example, WordPress is tabs and blah, 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 spaces. So I just, Sublime's got a tool that converts them for you. So I always press tab, but what comes out of it is depending on the project.
And that's the thing. I think that conversation is kind of getting to a point now where it doesn't really matter anymore, because the IDE can handle it for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have the same thing. So I do both WordPress and Laravel based work, and I'm doing it in PHP Storm, and I just have a different code style set up for each project, and Bob's your uncle, and I don't care about it.
Yeah.
So I still like to ask the question though, just because some people still have a very strong, you know, it must be tabs or it must be spaces. So I always like to ask and find out.
Well, as far as I know, Python, and I might be mistaken, it's very like indentation specific. So like, and it's space-based. So like two spaces, throw errors, ask me to block me in. So right. I think if you speak to a lot of Python devs, they'll be like, spaces, obviously, because tabs won't work.
So you probably find the whole debate comes more from the old, I call them old school languages, but the languages that were very specific. So the C++'s and the Pythons and those kind of things. Interesting. Yeah. See, I've never had that problem, because I learned to code using things like Visual Basic and Delphi where it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And then I went straight into PHP, and I've been doing that ever since. So it's, you know, it's never been something I've ever had to worry about.
Yeah. Maybe when I've dabbled a bit more in Python, I'll let you know about if my answer's changed.
Awesome. That'll be cool. Awesome stuff. Well, that's all I have to ask you today. If people want to get you around the interwebs, where can they find you?
Probably the best place is various Slack channels, because that's where I'm most active. So Make WordPress, Slack, WP South Africa Slack, ZDTech, those are the ones I'm most active in. Also, can grab me on Twitter at Segan. Very common. So
it's nice when your name is something that you can make unique.
Yeah.
Out of interest, does Segan, the name, what does it come from? Do you know the background of it?
So this is a very long story, so I don't know if I have time for it, but it's quite funny. So for some reason, I think when I was very young, I asked my mother, and she told me, and I kind of just changed the story as I grew up. So I remember telling a group of my Jewish friends that were over at my house one day. I was like, so they're like, what does your name mean? So I was like, oh, sea, like as in the ocean. And they're like, okay, cool. And Gin is gift in Hebrew. And they were like, no, it's not. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, no, just Gin is nothing in Hebrew. I was like, oh my goodness, I've been lied to. So I actually started investigating, and it's actually Gin is gift in Gaelic. And my Davis has Welsh heritage, so I think that's where.
Oh, I see.
So basically, her whole idea was gift of the sea, or from the sea, or for the sea, kind of thing, because she loves the ocean. And so, Segan, sea gift, basically.
Interesting. Yeah. That's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it's original.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Segan, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure to have you on as my first interview for the podcast. Hopefully this interview will also, you know, convince other people to come and join us. I think a lot of people that I've spoken to have kind of shown either concern that we're going to be talking about hacking WordPress core and how to contribute and all that kind of thing, or they're just concerned about, you know, sort of talking about what they do. So I think from my point of view, this has been a great sort of first interview and sets a nice little standard. It's always awesome to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you at the various WordCamps that we'll be both hosting this year. I think you've got WordCamp coming up, you said, in November.
November. November. But November. You told me I'm not allowed to tell dates either, so I'm not going to say that.
Okay, well then I won't say dates. Yeah. But yeah, I'll definitely be coming up to that, and I think you're coming down to Cape Town, so yeah, it'll be awesome to catch up again.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. It was great. Look forward to hearing more.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Cheers.